tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I am your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 30 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we're speaking with Wednesday Hugus. Wednesday filled up her spare time during COVID by trapping local cats in her neighborhood to bring in for TNR. She also collected donations for a pet pantry to provide food and supplies for less fortunate people that could no longer afford to feed their pets. Her intention was to help people feed their pets to avoid the need to surrender to rescues or just dump the cat outside to fend for itself. Pantry became well-known throughout Nextdoor, which helped her build a network of trappers and community feeders. In November of 2023, Wednesday officially created a 501c3 nonprofit that focuses on providing TNR services, pulling medical needs cases from the Orange County euthanasia list in Orlando, Florida, providing food and supplies for community feeders, and fostering abandoned kittens until they're ready for adoption. The goal is to take community cats and provide food, a home, and vet care until it's ready to be handed over to a rescue for adoption for friendly cats or returned to the community for the feral cats. Wendy, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much, Stacey. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to have me on today.
So, how'd you get to be so passionate about cats? COVID got you thinking, I guess, huh?
Well, I've always been a lifelong animal lover, which I think all of us in rescue can relate to. But my mom was in dog rescue growing up, so I used to help with that portion. And then when we moved to downtown Orlando, there was an abundance of community cats. I think Orange County estimates there's 90,000 community cats. So I thought, I'm sure I could fix a few in my neighborhood. And down the rabbit hole we went.
So it just sort of compounded from there.
Correct. It went from I'll give cat food to people to now we provide traps to the community. We provide appointments for TNVR and we provide community cat medical when no other resources available through our other rescue partners that we fund.
And are there other organizations in Orlando doing TN? I know Florida says TNVR. Other
right.
places call it TNR.
We'll take any of the above. So when I got into rescue 5 years ago for cats, what we saw is independent pockets of trappers and organizations working independently of one another. So Orange County Animal Services had a TNR program, Pet Alliance of Greater Orlando had a TNR program, and then multiple independent trappers were trapping. But we really didn't see that interface where these groups were coming together. They were sort of more siloed. People were protecting and resource guarding because we know in rescue, of course, resources are limited. So I really wanted to be able to be that connector between these different organizations so that we don't do private adoption. So there's no competition with us for rescues to worry that we're going to come in and take over their pet adoption facility. We do community cat medical with our partners at Pet Alliance, where none such existed before because there was no funding for that and no doctor. It was primarily trappers would go to any independent vet that would see them. And if they could afford to do the medical, they would do it. I think we've raised probably over $375,000 in the last 5 years to fund community cat medical for TNR and for different procedures. And we've also helped each individual reputable nonprofit that we can, because we don't think it's about us being the best out there. We think it's collectively about the team working with everyone in the community that we can to build these partnerships so that these cats can get some help.
So it sounds like you've cast a wide net trying to understand what are the current and existing resources in the Orlando area. And then you're trying to help support and facilitate some scalability to be able to increase the amount of cats that are able to be helped. And with that, strategically thinking, one would look and see like what's missing, what do we have? So what is missing in Orlando? What do you have? What are the strengths and the weaknesses for community cats in Orlando?
When I look at a strength and weakness analysis, I think the biggest weakness is not enough people to help. With 90,000 estimated community cats and maybe 35 volunteer trappers, it doesn't matter what rescue is trying to solve that problem, we're just outnumbered. So we can't make a difference for all of these cats, but we can make a difference for that particular cat, which I think is important to focus on. Otherwise, the scale seems overwhelming.
What we do have that's our biggest strength is our partners. So Orange County Animal Services has a policy that they don't kill feral cats. They're not legally allowed to be picked up and turned in for euthanasia. They're not allowed to just be picked up because they're a nuisance. So since that policy has changed, the number of community cats that have been euthanized just for being community cats has gone down dramatically. Orange County Animal Services also works very hard to reach out to qualified rescue partners like myself to pull these cats off the kill list if they're under 2 pounds because they're not old enough to be spayed or neutered or vaccinated, or because they have something medically wrong that the shelter is just not equipped to pay for or facilitate. So from a public health standpoint, we're very, very lucky with our public shelter. They get a lot of hate just for being a kill shelter per se, but we've seen the advantages of them working really hard with rescues like myself to try to minimize the number of animals that have to be euthanized because they really do reach out to the community. Same thing on the nonprofit side, Pet Alliance of Greater Orlando is the biggest rescue here in Orlando. They're well-known, they're excellent, and they were willing to partner with my organization. We pay for all the community cat medical initially. Other partners like Franklin's Friends have stepped up as well, which is phenomenal, to help fund these TNVR procedures and these medical procedures for these cats that had no advocate prior. So I'd say our biggest strengths is not only does the public shelter really try not to euthanize, but we also have private resources that are also looking to help these cats where we see a void in other counties, in Orange County primarily.
So I'd love to ask you sort of how does that work? So I've been involved with funding some targeted area projects, and basically it is give the organization money and you say folks from the zip code, if they're bringing in TNR cats, I'll pay the bill. Is that sort of how you have it worked out?
No, we're a little different, which I think is interesting. We are zip code focused. For myself, I'm the designated trapper for downtown Orlando, per se. When I plugged myself into your cat calculator, I used my zip code, which is much more affluent than, let's say, the impoverished area of downtown Orlando. And the numbers came back exactly the same for the number of cats that needed fixed. So I know it's an estimate, but we try to be focused just on the Orange County area. We've not seen a complete elimination of cats when you just focus on one zip code. We do have targeted areas such as Orlando. It's called Paramore downtown. I've probably personally trapped 1,200 cats there since we started. Pine Hills is another area. You're not getting a lot of cats from the affluent part of Winter Park. So we don't see a lot of trapping going on there. It's not as measured as some rescues who really only do these three zip codes and that's all they'll focus on. We say if it's Orange County, we try to reach out to our fellow trapping partners and we'll pay for those cats for TNR or for medical if we have the resources and availability through the clinic. So we don't personally solicit grants. We don't want to take that money away from other nonprofits. We do our own internal fundraising. And of course, people are able to use the grants that are available in the community. But we're not primarily asking other larger nonprofits to give us money. We're personally fundraising that ourselves.
All right. And just for those of you who have used the community cat calculator, it makes sense that those numbers would be exactly the same because it takes your zip code and then it gives you the estimates based on the full county. So if your zip code and the town next door are both falling in the county, then that it's reporting the county numbers. If you want to do it based on your zip code or based on a population number that you know of that exists within a subset, then you go to the PDF, which has the methodology, and you can do the math on your own.
And that's why we estimate about 90,000 in Orange County. And that, again, is a Pet Alliance number that they've extrapolated based on the number of occupants in Orange County, the number of cats plus or minus they could have in their offspring. So whether it's 33,000 cats or 90,000 cats, it's way too many cats for any of us to be able to have out there on the street that we think are living a quality life.
So from that standpoint, so the calculator gets you to a goal level or the Pet Alliance number of 90,000. And I feel pretty strongly that a lot of the numbers can be impacted by doing owned cats versus just the TNR cats. Do you have a sense in your area how many affordable owned cat spays and neuters are out there as well as TNR opportunities?
So that's a great question. So when I looked at your pyramid and we look at the owned cats, the nice thing about our trappers is when they're interfacing with the homeowners, they're free volunteers and they say, how many do you have inside? If you've got, you know, 10 cats inside, we don't leave those behind either. If they're owned, we don't steal their cats and not return them. We make sure those are fixed and returned as well. We also partner with some of the fellow rescues that will get like the Florida license plate grant where it fixes owned cats. So we'll reach out to those resources and say, hey, we've got 3 cats at this address. If we bring them in, can we use your money? Otherwise, some of the low income or low cost clinics in the area, it's $60 to get your cat spayed or neutered, which is, you know, affordable. And if they still can't afford that, they have a Spay It Forward program where it can be as low as $25 to $15, just depending on income levels. So I think we're very fortunate in this county and in this area to be able to help not only community cats, but own pets for the low-income households.
So with 90,000, I'm doing the math in my head here. I mean, just off the top of my head, I would say at least 70,000 of those should be owned cats with 20,000 for TNR. And when I say TNR, that's what's being returned back. It's not the kittens that are getting trapped and being brought in for a rescue. That's what's going back out. And then as an estimate for a high quality, high volume spay neuter veterinarian, anywhere in that 4,000 to 6,000 cats a year is what they can probably accomplish with the support team. And so then the issue is trying to identify how many of those high quality, high volume veterinarians do you have in this, in the region? And are you, how close are you to the reaching those numbers, and what capacity do you need to add and build into the system?
Well, I think we have a deficit just like everybody else. Veterinarian burnout is very high. The number of veterinarians at each clinic is very difficult to maintain and to replace. And so I think Orlando is no different or more special than any other part of the country, where you're seeing a shortage of not only support staff, but veterinarians to be able to accomplish those goals. I know that some organizations have been trying to hire a full-time vet for several years unsuccessfully. So there's definitely going to need to be something above my pay grade to help fix that problem as well.
It's never above your pay grade. Anybody can build and grow capacity. And, you know, there's a group of folks in California right now that are trying to get it so that technicians can do cat neuters. And there's also proposals out there for a mid-level practitioner that would be able to do spay and neuters procedures, especially for cats. And so that would open up some more capacity, as well as trying to encourage our private practice veterinarians to adapt the high quality, high volume spay neuter techniques. So they're doing a 6-minute spay rather than a 30-minute spay, and trying to work a little bit smarter and more efficiently for all of us. And obviously they need the support staff and the techs to be trained in that process to be able to work on the high quality spay neuter opportunities. But yeah, definitely trying to think outside of the box. But I do understand that not every veterinarian, not every rescue group, not every rescuer or municipal or animal control, we all don't think the same. We all have disagreements. We all have challenges, and we all have to be respectful of those differences and conversations. It's okay to have different opinions. Are you finding that there's conflict amongst those in animal welfare in Orlando?
I think you see some rescue groups that will save anything and keep it alive at any cost. And then sometimes that conflicts with the rescue groups that are more pragmatic, more, we have limited resources, let's help the ones that we can help. And since we can't get consent for that cat who is horribly suffering, is it really the best and highest use of our time and resources to put this cat through 4 months of skin grafts without consent? So we don't see a lot of infighting. I mean, I think everyone has different opinions, but I've seen it's really nice people come together when given the opportunity to help. When the calls come out that there's a horribly injured cat, the community pulls together to help, which is great. And it doesn't matter from what facet they come from. If one rescue gets it, but they can't afford to pay for it, we try to step up and help take care of the medical so that cat can get help.
What happens to cats when disaster strikes? The Lahaina wildfire left behind hundreds of surviving cats, but thanks to a coordinated rescue effort, many were saved. Now the experts behind that response are sharing their insights, from on-the-ground rescues to reunification and placement. On May 13th, from 1 to 6:15 p.m. Eastern Time, join those who are on the ground in Maui for a vital discussion on disaster preparedness for cats. Learn how to rescue and find outcomes for cats in crisis, and how you can prepare your own community. Sign up now at communitycatspodcast.com/recover, because no cat should be left behind.
In a recent study, 97% of respondents said that pets are family. Communities can play a vital role in helping to keep families together. Whether it's reuniting lost pets with their owners, donating pet supplies or funds for pet owners in need, or offering short or long-term fostering, people can help keep pets and their people together. We just have to show them how. Did you know there are resources you can use to help bring attention to the programs you offer to help them do just that? From public service announcements, short videos, printable posters, online and social graphics, and much more. Find your resources at www.petsandpeopletogether.org/campaign-resources. Hashtag be a helper. Mark your calendar. It's happening this Saturday. Join us this Saturday to learn the art of trap, neuter, return, a powerful way to transform the lives of community cats. Brought to you by Community Cats Podcast and Neighborhood Cats. This session is for anyone who wants to turn their passion for cats into action. Whether you're a seasoned caretaker or just starting out, there's something for everyone to learn. Don't wait. Reserve your spot now at communitycatspodcast.com/gettnrcertified. Are you a proud cat parent looking for the perfect, affordable health care for your kitty? Well, look no further than the Community Cat Clinic, conveniently located in Woodstock, Georgia, just north of Atlanta, and not too far from the Tennessee and South Carolina borders. The health and happiness of all cats are the top priorities at this feline-only hospital. From preventative care, spay, neuter, and vaccines, to specialized and innovative treatments like full-mouth dental, ultrasound, radio, iodine therapy, emergency blockage cases. They've got your cat's well-being covered. For the TNR community and local shelters, they offer easy-to-access, low-cost spay-neuter services and volume appointments. So if you want to do a large TNR project, this is the clinic you want to go to. It's worth the extra trip. Appointments are available most days. Check out the Community Cat Clinic online at communitycatclinic.com or visit them in person at the Walmart Shopping Center at the Shops of Trickum on Highway 92 at Trickum Road in Woodstock, Georgia. More purr, less price. So as you're out there looking to bridge the gaps, funding is one big gap that folks and organizations, individuals need. Veterinary shortage, maybe another missing piece of our puzzle or a challenged area. What are the other challenges that you see?
What I think we're finding is not just with our organization, but every animal rescue organization, you get burnout, you get volunteer turnover. Even the best organizations get that. So if there's 90,000 cats, you've got 100 volunteers. Most of our volunteers are either retirees. So you've got that sort of graying of America. So they reach a point where it's not that they don't want to, but they've just gotten too old that they can't physically continue to help volunteer. And then you've got people who work who want to help desperately, but they just don't have the time during the day to do that, which is primarily when these clinics are open. So we try to partner with people for volunteer hours if they're college students or high school students. We try to make opportunities for people to be able to help where they can. We'll meet them where they are. Do you want to do laundry because that's what you're capable of doing? Are you great at sewing? So you want to sew trap covers for the community clinics? Whatever it is, we try to plug you in. I think we just try to think outside the box a little bit. So if driving is your passion and you want to be transport, we got you covered there as well.
As you have this new organization, but you're very strategic in your thoughts. So in your mind, as the president of this 501c3, what are your measures of success?
So I think for us, I've seen cats that nobody else. We try to be kind of the last resort. We let other rescues step up and take whatever they think they can adequately handle. But we try to be their rescue of last resort. So if someone says, this cat has till Tuesday on the kill list because it has, you know, it needs an eye surgery or a leg amputation, that's a measure of success for us. Is like we can look back and see how many medical cats we were able to take off of the kill list and place those cats back into the community where they came from if it's suitable. Otherwise, we use a sanctuary partner very limited amount of the time because we, of course, know that's the top of the pyramid. We don't want to overwhelm our rescue partners. And so for us, it's what can we do that others, not that they're not willing to do, they just don't either have the resources to do that or they just don't have the connection. So we try to be that kind of like the last stop on the train station before the Rainbow Bridge.
You talked about using Nextdoor a lot. Some of our listeners might not know what Nextdoor is, and really, how did you leverage it?
So for those of you who don't know what Nextdoor is, it's like Facebook for neighbors, but a lot more yelling and fighting about someone put poop in my garbage can. So that's in a nutshell how that works for us. I didn't see Facebook as being the best vehicle when we started to connect neighbors. I wanted to be somewhere where someone could reach out and say, hey, I found a wounded cat on 14th Street. Can someone help? And we as volunteers could go right over and help. Whereas Facebook seems to be more globalized between you and your friends, unless you join a group that's like Cats of Orlando, per se. I just didn't find that real-time interaction to be as effective. Plus, it had all the other things that come along with Facebook that I didn't particularly love. So joining Nextdoor allowed me to say, hey, you need a ham for Christmas, because we started by helping people first. Then we continue to try to help people, not just their pets, when the opportunity presents. We're doing a homeless initiative here in December, and that's we were able to fix, I think, over 300 cats for the homeless community, not only by helping them, but by helping their cats. So Nextdoor, with all of its quirks, we built our own group there. And now when there's a cat issue, people say, hey, reach out to Wednesday's Community Cats and Kittens. Maybe she can help. And so it was a much more focused approach for us. We do have a Facebook page. We do have a Instagram page, but that's not how we primarily interact with people. We found this to be the most real time, and it allows the people who donate and volunteer to see what's going on a day-by-day basis, as opposed to maybe they just get an Instagram picture of a medical cat that doesn't necessarily tell the whole story for them.
And I think you stress an important point, which is find a platform that's comfortable to you and stick with it and focus on it rather than being all over the place. And probably being my own therapist here, because we have Twitter, we have Pinterest, we have Instagram, we have Facebook. Up here in Vermont, we have a thing called Front Porch Forum, which is kind of the same as Nextdoor. I feel like we're posting everywhere, but you know, it's scattered but not focused, right? So
right.
You took one channel and decided to really make that like the front door to your organization, really.
Yes. And we don't have a website even. This is what we use in real time, because again, we are a small but mighty organization, and we wanted to really work on the resources that were working for us, as opposed to, like you said, diluting that focus, in which it's very difficult for people to say, well, am I following up to see what they're doing on Facebook today, or am I going to get a tweet? I don't know. So I think Nextdoor has had its challenges. Anyone who's on there will say, oh, I hate going on there because it's neighbors fighting. I say, if you come to our group, that's not what it's about. It's just about helping cats, and you can avoid the main forum if that's not your thing and just come to our group.
So you mentioned a pet pantry earlier. Can you define a little bit more? I'm also president of Positive Pantry. So we cover Vermont and Massachusetts for pet food all across the state. So curious to find out more about your pet pantry.
That's amazing. So I started a human pantry during COVID, and I quickly found out that pet food was not one of the approved items that many of these people could get with food stamps. So they were feeding their cats tuna, which is lovely, but not necessarily sustainable if it's taking money out of their own budget for food for the month. A lot of these people would rather feed their cat than themselves. And so I looked around. We didn't have any other pet pantry. Sometimes they'll get a pop-up at the county shelter, or Pet Alliance will do a giveaway. But we wanted to be able to create something small that's run out of my garage. So I'm sure my husband loves that. And we get donations from the community for pet food. And we disperse that to trappers, to colony feeders, and to low-income people as we get it. We have a private donor that donates about $1,000 a month, which is small potatoes for some organizations. But for us, we're super grateful that when we go places and people say, I'm down to my last tiny bag of food and I've stretched it for 4 days, without the food that you're giving us, these cats wouldn't get to eat today. So we also use our private funds to fill that gap when people can't donate. We buy our own food through Chewy or Amazon, and we have a wish list. But people come to the house and pick it up, and I'm sure my neighbors think I have some sort of crazy operation going on here, because it's like the lineup out front here in our residential community.
Yeah, and that's how Positive Pantry started up here in Vermont. And then about 7 or 8 years ago, we established a partnership with the Vermont Food Bank. Because they decided, like you, they discovered if people are going to feed mac and cheese, rice, whatever they can get their hands on, they're going to feed it to their pets. And so we provide pet food through the Vermont Food Bank, which has resulted in almost 200,000 pounds of pet food going through their system because it enabled a partnership with Feeding America, which has some funding from PetSmart Charities. And so the Vermont Food Bank gets these large donations from Feeding America because they're a Feeding America partner. And it all just makes sense, right? It's just right in their distribution system. And so that's what we facilitate, or trying to make these connections so that then we can get food to go into the system. Massachusetts is very different. Massachusetts, we operate like a dating service between retailers and local food shelves because the Feeding America partners don't want to distribute pet food at this point in time. We hope that will change. But right now, so we'll take a local retailer and we'll have a volunteer liaison do a dating service with that retailer and the local food shelf, and they will enable to get the pet food over to that food shelf or the food pantry that's willing to take pet food. And we do one-on-one approaches to both the retailers. So we have outreach volunteers who work on that, coordinating those volunteers in Massachusetts, which is a much higher labor-intensive situation, but it's very local too, because these are local volunteers. They shop at the retailer. So there's a very close connection, where in Vermont, we have a bit more of separation away from those resources. So different models for different places, different strategies. But at the end of the day, we want folks to be able to access pet food so that they don't have to make decisions about their pets or feed them food that was really meant for the family and not meant for the pets.
And I think that's what you guys have accomplished is amazing. I still have a full-time job. So I'm hoping when I retire this year, next November, that I'll be able to expand some of my additional efforts. Because like you said, with limited manpower, I love the pantry, but I can't imagine if we moved to a warehouse right now, even if we had that capacity, then having to run it would be a whole nother adventure. So I think partnering with a food bank is a logical next step, and it's a really wonderful idea.
Right. And when I go and I visit the Vermont Food Bank, the staff there, the first thing they say is, oh, so many people call us and thank for the pet food. It's either the baby diapers and the formula, or it's the pet food. But those are the two things that get the most thank yous. And so it just shows that there's just an incredible demand. And since COVID, the demand for pet food has tripled since we started working with them. Wednesday, if folks are interested in finding out more about your organization, where would you like to have them go?
Well, you can join us at Wednesday's Community Cats and Kittens on Nextdoor. There's a wealth of information on us there on how to donate, how to volunteer, but you can also find us at those same links on Facebook and Instagram. And we really appreciate the opportunity to share our information. And if you're interested in volunteering, please reach out. We can always use more helping hands.
And any last words that you'd like to share with our listeners?
We like to tell people, if you can't fix them, don't feed them. So you may think you're being kind to a community cat out there by starting to feed them. Make sure you do the responsible thing and spay and neuter so that we can help keep that population controlled. And we appreciate everyone being part of the solution.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And really, congratulations on your new organization. I know it doesn't feel new to you, but from my perspective, being in this since the 90s, you're like the new kid in town, and it's great. So welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you so much. And I can't wait to have you on the show again in the future.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure. Thanks for letting us share our story with you and your listeners.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.